නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. ලාභකම්මාන සික්ඛති, අලාභේච න කුප්පති, අවිරුද්ධෝ ච තණ්හාය රසේසු නානු ගිජ්ජති ඉති. So, venerable brother, Dhamma friends, so we were discussing Purabeda Sutta, which is available in the Suttanipata, Dattakavagga. So, interestingly, this has happened among the Devas and the Brahmas. So, Buddha was delivering this Sutta to the Devas and the Brahmas during an occasion which is so special. There are so many Devas and Brahmas gathered, and this is according to the Dhamma. This happens only once in that extent to a particular Buddha. There may be individual occasions where Devas or Brahmas coming individually or as a little group and meeting the Buddha and having various discussions. There are many such occasions recorded in the canon. But this is special where innumerable number of, countless number of Devas and Brahmas gathered, and in that assembly that Buddha is now trying to preach them Dhamma. And certain Devas had the question, what needs to be done before the breaking off of the body? And there Buddha want to clarify that in detail. So he used a trick. He has created a mind-made Buddha and a Sangha. And when that mind-created Buddha asking questions, so the real Buddha is answering. So this is the scenario that the how Sutta has comes up. And so we were discussing several verses recorded in this Sutta, and now we can get on to the next verse. Labhakamya na sikkhati, alabhecha na kuppati, aviruddhocha tanhaya rasesu nanu gijjati. Now, as we already mentioned, this sutta highlights certain subtle aspects of the mind, certain very subtle defilements happening in the mind. So sometimes it is easy to understand, say, lustful thoughts, angry thoughts, kind of an aversion, maybe restlessness, or even when the mind become concentrated. All these states are easy to understand as one more and more familiar with the mind, with the mindfulness practice. These are not that difficult to understand. But certain very subtle behaviors that we show as human beings are difficult to understand. So what are the subtle influences coming from the mind? So such subtle defiled states are very beautifully explained in this sutta and giving some subtle touch to those areas. So actually the mentality shows certain behaviors, and so the behavior being influenced by certain defiled mental behaviors, you can say certain mental states, defilements. So the first one mentioned today's verse, Labhakamya na sikkhati. Now one can even use the training to sort of impress the others, or to get their praise, or to earn some reputation, or sometimes to increase one's gains. So these kinds of some subtle ulterior motives could be introduced to the training even. We know that Sila, Samadhi, Panya, the three main trainings that one has to undergo. Say one is developing the morality. So restraining the words, restraining the behavior, the bodily behavior. So even there one can behave in an attractive way, in a more polite way. I mean, if one is doing that honestly, so that one can maintain mindfulness, one can maintain one's practice, so that you are not being disturbed, others are also not being disturbed. So we are maintaining such kind of a morality. So that is well accepted. But here the point is, one is behaving like that, but with a ulterior motive, with a hidden tendency, a kind of a hidden agenda, where one want to impress the others. Say one is maintaining certain ritual or maintaining certain austere practice, still not aiming at cutting off the defilements or weakening the defilements, but it can happen due to certain other interest. Say for example, one is practicing Pindapata, the alms round in the village. Suppose that the others are, other monks are basically getting what is offered at the monastery, but certain others may be going out looking for alms round in the village. This is not a bad thing, and certain monks are doing it. That is also encouraged. So if one is doing it with proper intention, that is really welcomed. Because many devotees are there who are unable to come to the monastery and maybe even poor. They become really happy after seeing the monks going on village Pindapata and offering them food. And they become more and more faithful. So that's a very appreciative thing. But on the other hand, when a monk is going through such practice, probably that praise, that you being special, you being treated in a different way, and other monks are also sort of appreciating your that practice, can make you certainly conceited, or you are using it from a different angle now. So you might even start, one might even start condemning the monks who are staying at the monastery and having the alms from the monastery, and you feel that you are so special and you are the role model and you are the superior and you are the ones sort of giving the example. And such kind of a mentality can happen in one's mind. Now one is doing the practice not with the proper motive, but with a different motive. So likewise, our behaviors has to be always verified, whether am I doing it with proper intention or am I doing it with some ulterior motive, just to impress others, just to develop certain conceit, develop certain personality, or to become popular. So all that needs to be verified. Again and again, the mind has to be reflected in order to understand these kind of motives. Because the mind can shift from some genuine interest to a kind of a cunning interest. So one may be starting certain practice with some genuine interest, with some honest background, but at a certain point it can shift toward the other side. So that we need to understand. So in case it happens, so we need to stop it, we need to prevent it, and we might have to shift to another kind of a practice rather than continuing that practice. So there are such very interesting occasions even recorded in the commentary. So where are certain, say, good monks, good practitioners, even they are practicing certain dutanga, certain austere practices in a very innocent way, without making it popular, without showing it to the others, so that one becomes special. So they don't want to become special among the others. They also living as a typical monk, as a normal person, without showing their special skills or without showing their special such practices. So those are recorded even in the commentary. So I'll give you one example. Actually, one monk was practicing Nesajjikanga. Nesajjikanga is a very difficult Austria practice where one is not lying down on a bed even at night, but maintaining a kind of a sitting posture even during the night, and giving more emphasis on to the practice. And he was doing it for a long time. And one day he had a visitor, a visiting monk. And so he has to share the premises with the other monk. And so they both started sleeping. The arriving monk, the visiting monk first slept. So other monk was actually sitting on his bed without sleeping in the sitting posture. By the way, in the middle of the night, that visiting monk waken up. And he saw that the other resident monk is not sleeping but in a sitting posture. So the visiting monk make a comment, "Oh, are you in the Nesajjikang? Are you in the Nesajjikang? So are you in the sleepless posture? So are you in that Dutang?" So in that instant, that resident monk who was practicing for years that particular austere practice simply slept. So he doesn't want to become a popular special person using that. Rather, he simply slept. He simply broken that vow, and he slept. So this indicates that he is using such austere practice not to become certain highly recommended or highly popular person, rather just to maybe to enhance his practice, to further weaken the defilements. So that was his proper intention, that he is trying to maintain that. But when his back practice being exposed, he doesn't want to show it. So he simply slept. So likewise, certain very interesting situations were recorded in the commentary. So how the proper monks are doing it for proper purpose, the right purpose. So they are not even using the sila for aiming any gain or fame as such, rather doing it for proper reason. And Dutanga especially are such areas where one going beyond the typical practice, taking certain some special practices, but for what purpose? That is something that the monk has to check, whether one is using it for highlighting oneself or you want to become so special, or is there any conceit in the mind? So these kind of reflections are essential to maintain, so that because at a given point the mind can shift from the genuine interest to the certain wrong interest. And the other side is if we take the samadhi side, the concentration, that also can happen. Say probably one start meditating at a popular place, and so that others will know you as a meditator, and you start talking on that, you start preaching on that, conducting classes, retreats, and so you can be a very popular meditative monk. Or on the other hand, one can be a unknown meditative monk also, because you don't need to show off through the meditation, and sometimes it can be even a hindrance. So that's why sometimes the lay people particularly, they don't have to show the others that I am a meditator, because sometimes it can be a hindrance to themselves, because others might not understand what you are doing, or others start asking various things, or even they consider you as a special person, and that can even be a hindrance. So till you become more and more stable, better do it in a secret way. So once you are stable, probably you can be a Kalyana Mitra to the others and give an example that may be accepted. But till you being confident, till you are very much stable in your practice, so better do it in a more unpopular way, so that you are not being hindered in the process. So similar in the Panya Sikha, so there are also the training has to be done with proper motive, not for any kind of a gain or fame. So these are certain areas that we need to see. So where our practice is aimed at. Am I aiming my practice for attaining Nibbana? Am I aiming my practice for popularity? Am I aiming my practice with gain and fame? Or am I doing it with proper motive that others even don't know? So I'm doing it with proper motive, in a genuine interest, with a genuine interest. So that is something that we need to verify time to time. Because we can start with proper motive, but it can at a certain point shift to the other side. So we need to accept that there is such vulnerability in the mind. So such cunning interest can come to the surface and start influencing the mind, that we need to verify time to time. So if it is happening, then we need to make a decision to change our behavior, to even stop the certain practices and to shift to the other side, so that we are not being carried away by that kind of a cunning motive. And then alabhecha na kuppati. Now this is a very interesting part. Alabhecha na kuppati. So the point is that during our life, so there are various situations that we have to go through. So typically this is explained as the worldly dhammas, 8 worldly dhammas that one has to go through, attaloka dhamma. So there are 8 such cases: the labha alabha, gain and loss, sukha dukkha, say the happiness and the suffering, and then gain and say sorry the other one is praise and the blame, prasansa and ninda, and then fame and ill fame, yasa ayasa. So these are the typical 8 vicissitudes of the life that everybody has to go through. Even the Buddha had to go through it, the arahants have to go through it. So this is how the whole world is going through. We can't say that there is a special person who is continuously having or going through the gains, fames, happiness and the fame. One might have to shift to the other side without our any control. So that's the nature of the world. So we need to accept that. We need to understand that deeply. So this is how the world is behaving. We can't accept fame every day. There can be instances that the others are unhappy about us. They are not happy about us. They are not appreciating our work and our fame being tarnished. So it can happen. And again, there may be days that the people are praising us, and there may be other days people are criticizing us. And there may be days that we get a lot of profits and a lot of requisites, and many are offering things. Such gains are possible in one day, but the other day there may be losses. Maybe our food being eaten by rats, food being destroyed by fire, our lodgings being destroyed by the fire, or maybe certain other natural disaster. Recently the US has gone through many disasters, tornadoes, typhoons, etc. So various such kind of disasters are possible. So therefore our life is subjected to such kind of ups and downs. This is something that we need to understand. So the problem is, mostly people, when they go through the positive side, they become really happy, they're really uplifted, really overwhelmed by that situation. They start laughing, shouting, and overwhelmed by that. But on the other hand, when they are going through the other side, the negative side, when they are going through some losses, ill fame, various disasters, suffering, losses, so they start crying, and ultimately they even become depressed, and certain people even commit suicide. So this is how the world is. Typically the people are typically going through the vicissitudes, so they can't bear it. They don't know how to maintain an even mind during the ups and downs. So the highlight is alabhecha na kuppati. So when one loses things, one is not angry about it. So this indicates only part of the 8 loka dhamma, but it indicates the whole series, whole 8 parts, summarizes the whole 8 things. So there is a very interesting sutta talking particularly on this subject called Dutiya Loka Dhamma Sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya Attaka Nipata, where Buddha takes a kind of a comparison. So he is asking a certain question from the monks that the typical worldly being also go through the 8 vicissitudes of the life. But even the noble person go through this 8 vicissitudes of the life. So what's the difference? So then the monks answering the Buddha, Bante, our understanding is based on your preaching, so please explain the situation. So explain the point to us, then we will understand it, we will keep it in our mind, we will behave according to that. So the monks inviting the Buddha to explain it. Then Buddha say, so when typically a worldly being going through some labha, that means the gains, so he become really elated, he become sort of so happy, he can't even bear it, and he become really impressed by that, elated by that. So his mind become fully overwhelmed by that happiness because he got something. Same thing is common for praise, same thing is common for happiness, the typical sukha and the fame. But on the other hand, the other side, dukkha, the loss, unhappiness, ill fame, blame, in such cases he become really worried, he start crying, he become depressed, all that collapse can happen. And he become really even angry about it. He even start cursing the others, cursing the situation, cursing the nature of that. So this is how the typical worldly being is behaving. Now the Buddha is explaining the other side, how a good practitioner, a good follower of the Buddha, a good follower of the Dhamma, so how he is behaving. Sutavato cha ko bhikkave ariya savakassa uppajjati labhu so iti patisan chikkati. So now Buddha says, even the person who is going through the proper practice, he might encounter certain gain, labha. So, but once he go through such gain, he reflect like this. Uppanno ko me ayang labhu, sochako anicho dukko viparinama dhammoti, yathabhutam pajanati. Now I am going through this gain, but this gain is anicho dukko viparinama dhammo. This is also impermanent, this is also suffering, this is also subject to change. So he don't get overwhelmed by the gain, rather he understand even this gain side is impermanent. Today I am going through gain, fame, praise, etc. But tomorrow it may change. So this is a very temporary situation. This is a very temporary status of the life. Life is like a waveform. You can't say that when the upside is going through, that the downside is not happening, not going to come. It also will come. So you maintain such mentality, understand the reality, so that mind is not get elated, rather able to maintain it in at the middle. So Buddha further explained, tassa labhopi chittang na pariyadaya tithati. Similarly, alabhopi chittan na pariyadaya tithati, yasopi chittan na pariyadaya tithati, ayasopi chittan na pariyadaya tithati. So everywhere, every point he highlights, na chittang pariyadaya tithati. That means, so the mind does not obsess by the situation. He is not thinking too much about it. When a gain happen, typically people start talking and explaining it to the others, and giving some publicity to it, and too much overthinking about it, again and again thinking about it, both sides, either gain or loss, positive or negative, both sides they start too much thinking about it. Now the mind has lost its typical equilibrium, typical balance is lost now. Assume that you are a practitioner and was able to understand the evenness of the mind, clarity of the mind, say the calmness of the mind. So when you are going through the gain, fame, happiness and praise, are you able to maintain that calmness? Are you able to maintain that equanimity? Are we able to maintain that clarity? Are we able to maintain that, say, our peacefulness? Or are we become really elated? I start thinking too much about it. Are we making a self out of it? So I am the one, I am the best. So that's why I am getting all these gains. So I am more merit, I am with such merit power. So likewise, one can build a huge ego when things are happening to the positive side. But the proper thing is, so he understands this situation also impermanent, this is also subject to change, and this is also unsatisfactory. These are all sankhara, these are all conditioned phenomena. You can't trust them. Things are 50-50. And similarly, Buddha explained further, so upannang labang nanu rujjati alabhe na pati virujjati. So when he is going through gain, he is not attracted to it. When he is going through loss, he is not repelled by it. Similarly, when he is going through fame, he is not attracted to it. When he is going through some disrepute, ill fame, he is not repelled by it. When he is going through praise, he is not attracted to it. When there is such kind of a blame, he is not repelled by it. Similarly, when he is going through pleasure, he is not attracted to it. When he is going through pain, he is not repelled by that. So his mind is maintaining some stability. So further, anurodha virodha vippahino parimucchati jatiya jaraya maranena sokehi paridevehi dukkehi domanassehi upayasehi parimucchati dukkasmati vadami. Now Buddha summarizes telling, having thus discarded attraction and repulsion, he is freed from birth, from old age and death, from sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection and anguish. He is freed from suffering, I say. So this actually shows the maturity of one's character. The typical person start elated when things are happening to the favor of him, but he collapses when things are happening the other side, when things go wrong. But the mature person, the person particularly developed in the spirituality, he can maintain evenness amidst these vicissitudes. So alabecha na kuppati indicates that depth that he is going through, he is showing in the day-to-day activities, how he is living his life as a mature person, as a with a stable mind. Then aviruddhocha tanhaya rasesu nanu gijjati. So not hostile, because of craving he does not hanker after tastes. Now particularly the taste is something that monks have to be careful, because that is the only sense door which is open. Now typical monks vinaya, the discipline, so monks are not allowed to enjoy movies, so theaters and all that, dancing or any of those are not typically allowed. Music also not allowed, and typical adornment, various scents, so those are also not allowed. And so beautifying one's body, that is also not allowed. Sex is also not allowed, and so many things are not allowed. But we as human beings, we need certain food to maintain the body, so the food is allowed. So the only open door is the tongue. So ultimately what happened, so the monks or the practitioners who are celibate start giving priority to the tastes. They start looking for various tastes, they start slowly attracted to various tastes, and particularly to the sweet, and ultimately end up with diabetics. So this commonly happens in the monk's life, and even in Sri Lanka it is heard 70% of the monks are suffering from diabetics. So it can happen because other doors are fairly closed and you have only one option, and that is even without one's knowledge, one being attracted to that. It is not that you person purposely doing it, but naturally one can be attracted to that type of craving, that kind of a greediness towards the sweets, towards various other food. But on the other hand, when you are a lay person, before you become a monk, say you don't have that that kind of a big interest on the taste, because the other doors are also open. So you are getting various things from the other doors as well. So there is no special interest to the taste. But once one becomes celibate, once one becomes a monk, so only open door is the tongue door, and therefore there could be an additional interest in that area. So this point highlighted here by the Buddha, so the Arahant on the other hand, rasesu nanu gijjati, he doesn't have even such kind of a delight, such kind of a favor, or such kind of a going after taste, because he has abandoned the tanha, he has abandoned the craving. So here we as practitioners, we again have to reflect, am I going through too much of the taste, going after such tastes? Am I taking too many sweets? Am I eating too much sweets? So this is something that we need to recognize. So I am before the lunch, am I imagining about it? So these kinds of things we have to reflect. So how the mind is thinking about it. Say for example, you are participating to a retreat and they announce that there is no dinner provided, only two meals, morning and the lunch. So after the lunch, so are you happy not having the meal, not having the dinner? So are you thinking about the next morning breakfast? So it can happen. So we need to understand so how the mind is behaving. So when it is not given, when ample food is not available, when you are not freely allowed to eat, so there may be a special interest now developing within the mind. So when it is available, you are not having that sort of an interest to have food. But when it is not given, when that is protocol being changed, so the mind start maybe complaining and mind want to eat too much or have additional interest on sweets, too much concern about the nutrition and what you are eating, all that can happen. So mind starts playing with that. So these are some common mistakes that as human beings that we all can go through. So we need to verify our mind, we need to reflect our mind. So what is the kind of interest now the mind is having? Is it looking for any kind of a special buffet, any kind of special taste, any special food? Or is it happy with what is having? Is it happy with what is available? Are you going for village pindapatha, asking some special food? Or are you happy with currently what is available at the monastery? Are you interested in getting some food from the home when you are going to a retreat? Or are you happy what is offered at the retreat? So likewise, we need to understand our interest in the mind. So that's why, I mean, these things are in a way very difficult to understand sometimes. We sometimes like to rationalize it. We sometimes like to make it very reasonable. So I am going through this, I need it, I need that. So I'm trying to rationalize it. But probably there may be a hidden tendency. There may be a kind of a greediness operating in the mind. So we need to be very careful with that. And so the verse highlights here, so there is no any hostilities in the mind, and again there is no craving in the mind towards the tastes. And we'll get on to the next verse as well. Upekkako sada sato න ලෝකේ මඤ්ඤතේ සමං න විශේෂී න නීචයෝ තස්ස නෝ සම්ති උස්සදා උපෙක්ඛකෝ සදා සතු. So basically means one is ever mindful with equanimity. Ever mindful with equanimity. Now equanimity are of different forms, and one thing is one can become equanimous because one is helpless, and this is called ignorant equanimity, where one can't do anything other than being patient and just being equanimous because one is helpless. The other party or the situation is very much like difficult or stronger, and you are in a weaker position, so you want to become more neutral, more equanimous. But what is explained here is not that. So here the Arahant's equanimity or the practitioner's equanimity is more profound kind of equanimity, because he has understood the reality of the phenomena, how impermanent they are, how unsatisfactory they are, how non-governable, non-self they are. So as a result of that, a very deep, profound equanimity has emerged in one's mind. So this is the equanimity mentioned here. And not only that, sada sato, ever mindful. So the equanimity has gone hand in hand with mindfulness. So it is not that one is ignorant and completely become indifferent and insensitive. Rather, one is completely ever mindful and maintaining equanimity. So it is explained in certain suttas, and I have taken one example sutta called Vappa Sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya Chatukka Nipata. So there Buddha explains to one other ascetic, evaṁ sammā vimutta cittassa ko vappa bhikkhuno cha satata vihāra adigatā honti. So Buddha mentioned to this vappa that the monk who is fully liberated, six types of continuous practices are there, or continuity of the mind is there. So what is it? So chakkhumā rūpaṁ diṣvā neva sumano hoti na dummano upekkhako viharati sato sampajāno. So chakkhunā rūpaṁ diṣvā. So when he see various sights through his eye, neva sumano hoti, he doesn't become elated. Na dummano, he doesn't become, you know, unhappy either. Upekkhako viharati, he lives equanimously, sato sampajāno, with mindfulness and clear comprehension. So same thing repeated for the other faculties. When he hears sounds through his ears, when he smell various odors through his tongue, when he go through various states through his tongue, when he go through various tangible through his body, and various thoughts come to the mind, mental objects come to the mind. So all the six doors are mentioned here. So the point is, when the kind of difficult part happened, neva dummano, he does not become saddened by it. And when the positive part happened, he does not become delighted by it, rather was able to maintain equanimity, ever mindful, clearly comprehending. So this is called chalangupekkha. Typically this is called chalangupekkha, the six types of equanimity particularly possessed by the Arahant. So he has the clarity of the mind, the equanimity of the mind, evenness of the mind amidst the vicissitudes, as we already discussed. So same thing, actually refined way that Buddha is explaining, giving it to the six sense doors. So through the sense doors, actually you are operating with the world, you are dealing with the world, communicating with the world. So when it happens at different sense doors, so one is maintaining equanimity rather than being elated or saddened, but with clear comprehension and mindfulness, sada sato. So basically, so the point, sada sato. And na loke manyate samang na visesi na nichayo. Now this part is related to the conceit. You know that the conceit has three main forms. Either one consider oneself as more superior to the others, or one considers oneself as equal to the others, or one considers oneself as inferior to the others, below than the others. So this is how one is comparing oneself with the others. Either I am superior to them, I am better than them, I am equal to them, or I am, say, worse than them, I am inferior than them. So we always tend to do a kind of a measurement. We compare ourselves with the others. And after comparison, so sometimes we put ourselves at the pedestal. We put ourselves at the top. Or we put them even without proper, say, reason. We can even put to the same level. Assume that there is a good person, a venerated person, a respected person, but we are not like him. But probably we can put ourselves also to the same level, telling, okay, I am also like him, I am also venerated, I am also respectful. So why we bother about him? I am also like him. So likewise, we try to even put ourselves at the same level. But on the other hand, we can put ourselves really down, taking ourselves to the inferior level as well. So it can get into a certain disorder even. So the comparison is something that we always tend to do, and it is a typical, what we call a defilement, persisting till the arahantship. So mana is a very, very subtle defilement, always making a person and comparing that person with the other people, the other persons. So, na santi ussada. Now, whenever that conceit is going through, particularly the ussada is possible. Ussada is the swellings in the mind. So mind is not even, mind is not maintaining its, say, calmness, clarity, tranquility. Rather, certain triggers have happened, ripples have happened, swellings have happened, turbulence have happened. The calmness, the peacefulness of the mind is broken. So this ussada is a very beautiful term used at certain other places. I have taken another example here, beautifully mentioned in the Tuataka Sutta, where Buddha say the evenness of the mind with a very beautiful simile of the ocean. So you know that the ocean at the beach level, it has many, many waves, lot of noise and lot of turbulence. But as it deepens, it loses that turbulence and it becomes somewhat calm. But once you reach the middle of the ocean, it's completely calm. Total calmness is there are no waves. But in the deep ocean, so therefore Buddha mentioned, majje yatha samuddassa umino jayati titho hoti evan titho anejassa ussadam bikkuna kareya kohinchi. Just as in the middle of the ocean, no wave arises, but the ocean remains steady. So too, he should be steady without impulse. A bhikkhu should not cause a swelling anywhere. The swelling. So swellings indicate that turbulence in the mind. So according to the commentary, there are seven types of swellings. So the swellings happen due to seven reasons, we can say. One is the lust. So lust is a one reason that the swelling can happen in the mind, turbulence can happen in the mind. Hatred also similar, swelling can happen. Delusion is also same. Conceit, as you already discussed, conceit is always another swelling can happen. Views, various ditti. Ditti can make either oneself more rigid or more superior kind of thing, so the swelling can happen. Defilements are basically the reasons the swellings can happen. And the kamma also, they mentioned there, kamma also another factor, swelling can happen. So this, according to the commentary, the seven causes the swellings can happen in the mentality. But when the arahant's case, when all the defilements are uprooted, So he is able to maintain the clarity, the calmness, tranquility, irrespective of the situation. So that's the beauty, that's the depth. So that's the profundity of the Arahant's mind. So it indicates everywhere now in this particular sutta. So altogether we can combine. So he is maintaining the equanimity, ever mindful, and is not comparing himself either superior, same or inferior, and he has no swellings at all. Okay, with that I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions. No questions. So from our side there are no questions, so we'll see.
Okay, we just got a few. I'd like to invite Nandana for the question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante?
Yep.
You can hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So what you said at the very beginning of the teachings was very interesting. I thought how we sometimes act in a certain way, very subtle kind of ulterior kind of motives, instead of with a genuine, basically like show off like things. So I find that it's very interesting because I often find myself in acting like that. But after I say something or act in a certain way, I suddenly realize, oh, I basically try to show off. I try to show other people what I'm doing, or I try to talk about, how good I am or something like that.
Second.
So suddenly I find that, so, and when I realize it, I kind of feel somewhat bad and think, oh, that's not really good. But then I also ask myself, okay, why did I do that? Why did that happen? And then what I realize is often I think it is because of my conceit or ego.
Mm-hmm.
or Sakkaya Ditti or whatever you call it, it's just the me, the idea of me. There's been a me, so that's kind of what I realize every time this happens. I realize that is why I did that. So I'm going to ask you another question actually, based on that, because in our practice, what we are trying to do is eradicate, overcome defilements, and these defilements are the ones that make us feel this conceit, ego, and all those things. So my mind is usually naturally inclined to do after a certain time of concentration or samatha meditation. After that, my mind naturally inclines to vipassana. That is my practice. However, I have heard by some monks have, in their talks, they have said that samatha or concentration, that helps you to see the reality, things as they are. I think in Pali, there's something like, I can't remember exactly what it is, but you will probably know, it's samadhi-paccaya yata-bhuta asana, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have heard that. So because of that, what I have heard, I sometimes bring myself to practice samatha and stay in the samatha, stay with concentration and try to develop it more and more with an effort. In some sessions, I try to do it only that. Now, recently I heard another monk was giving a talk on Salleka Sutta.
Hmm.
And the Salleka Sutta he was explaining, I don't know where it is said, whether it is in the Salleka Sutta or another sutta, he said that the Buddha has said, actually he mentioned the jhanic factors and all five factors of the first jhana and all jhanic factors. And then he said, the Buddha has said that the samatha or the samadhi cannot cut or cannot sallek the defilements.
Correct.
So I'm kind of trying to reconcile these two positions that I've heard. We are trying to eradicate defilement so that we understand, so our main purpose is that. So, but, one place I hear that samatha or samadhi brings our mind to see the reality, things as they are. But then in the Salleka Sutta, when he was explaining that, he said samadhi or samatha or concentration does not cut or eradicate defilements.
Hmm.
Could you please explain whether I have heard wrong, whether I have understood wrong?
Yeah.
Or if not, could you please reconcile these two statements?
Mm-hmm. So I'll give you a simple example. Now say you have a dirty cloth and there is a little stain in it, and there's another case that you have a white cloth and there's a stain in it, and so once which one helps you to clearly see the stain?
White cloth.
Okay. Now after you notice the stain, will that enables you to will that automatically takes it out, the stain automatically takes it out, or you have to work out in a certain way to take the stain out? Either you are applying a detergent or you are using some other mechanism to take it out.
Yeah.
So you need that, right? So you need to see the stain clearly. And after you notice the stain, then it is up to you to use a proper mechanism to take it out. So the samatha and vipassana is like that. So the clarity of the mind, samahita, the clarity of the mind helps us to notice the defilements very clearly. But how to take it out, how to cut it basically, to weaken it. So that is in a way the part of the vipassana. Yeah, the panya part is the one actually removing it, drying it out, taking it out. So that can't do by the samatha. That is the part of the vipassana. So basically it's a kind of a combined job. So samatha helps us to maintain a background which is more clear and more calm, and so that the whatever the defilements are being clearly shown. But the vipassana, the wisdom part, is necessary to make use of certain methodology to overcome it, to abandon it. So both have to go hand in hand. So therefore we can't say the samatha is completely not necessary, vipassana is the only one needed, or we can't say the samatha is the only one needed and vipassana is not necessary. So both are needed, both are complementing to each other, helping each other. And therefore I feel basically the practice help us to properly blend it. So it's up to the practitioner to recognize, okay, where am I able to notice the defilement? So if you can't even notice the defilement, I mean the mind being completely deluded, completely polluted with lot of defilements, and you being completely unmindful and going through some obsessive thoughts and all that, so then that means there is no tranquility at all. There is no samatha at all in the mind. So there is no way of even recognizing the defilements. So the defilements have become very much deeply rooted in the mind, deeply engrossed in the mind. So you are completely become helpless. So you need to have a certain amount of clarity, certain amount of tranquility. Then only you are able to understand the operation of the defilements, the presence of the defilements, and then you may start working out as a recognizing certain methodology to overcome it. On the other hand, simply knowing the defilement, or rather say we say you are enjoying certain samadhi for long hours but not eradicating the defilements, but only weakening or suppressing them. The mere samadhi is like that. A mere samadhi, as explained in the Salleka Sutta, is a kind of a happy dwelling in this life. It's a very tranquil, blissful state available in the mind, but not cutting the defilement, not uprooting the defilement. So the uprooting the defilement is part of the vipassana. So mere being in a certain concentration does not indicate it. So therefore, the both tasks are needed to overcome the defilements.
Thank you. Thank you for the excellent explanation, Bhante.
Yeah.
So then what I have been doing was kind of misguided then, because I've been like, some days, you know, when you sit down, like when you start your meditation, some days your mind is really easy to start off within, like, you know, within 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, you start your vipassana practice, you're able to be in the open awareness. But there are some days that it is not like that. Some days your mind is very, you know, very busy.
Mm.
You are having a lot of things on your mind. You're worried about your work or some other family matter or something like that.
Mm.
So those are like, some days you have to like sit and, you know, sometimes for 45 minutes you're basically thinking about all your problems and finding solutions. And only just the last 15 minutes you are able to come to that open awareness.
Right.
So I have been actually, I have been trying to, even when I sit down and if I'm able to, within 2, 3 minutes, I'm able to get into the vipassana practice, I still think, oh, this is too easy. And I try to think, okay, I'm not doing enough samatha, so I'm going to, you know, I'm trying to take an effort to be practicing only samatha at that time. So that is not a good thing to do, right? When if I'm able to get into my normal natural practice immediately without taking much time, then it is best to continue with that without doing samatha. Is that correct, Bhante?
Yeah, because the mind is already clear. You are in a tranquil position. There is no any turbulence in the mind. So no need to have strong samatha at that level. Rather, you can reduce the effort and allow the mind to talk if it is necessary, because you are already ready to cut off the defilements. But on the other hand, if there is a lot of turbulence going on, if the mind is again and again taking various matters and, you know, there is no rest in the mind, then better make it more calm, more relaxed, quiet first. Otherwise, very difficult.
Right.
Otherwise, I mean, it's impossible.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Okay, Mate. Thank you very much. Terwan Sanai.
Yeah, Terwan Sanai.
Right. Thank you. I'd like to invite Ashini for the next question.
Yes.
Today, I'm hoping to forward the reflection report and the mindful walking. Firstly, I walked freely several times here and there. After that, I stood at the edge and observed my standing posture, thinking I am here now. Then, after I walked for a few minutes, paying attention to left and right feet, I felt hardness, roughness, coldness, dryness of the floor. Heel lifted very slightly when turning rather than when walking. Thoughts came to my mind. I labeled them as thoughts. Then my attention was drawn to feet. Weight of the body was mostly borne by right leg. Body swayed from side to side. Foot moved forward after toes firmly pressed the ground. Heard noises but continued acting. Mindful sitting. I sat and observed sitting posture with the thought, I am here now. I'm here right now. Then I observed abdominal movement. Various thoughts came to my mind. I labeled them. I heard noises. Rising of the belly was longer than falling of the belly. I felt thirsty. Then again observed rising and falling. That's all from the report.
Yeah. Good. I think there is nothing much to add in. So basically the mindfulness part is pretty good. Now you need to introduce the clear comprehension anyway. Now say for example, you are practicing rising and falling of the abdomen. So now it seems like you are able to experience say 10 risings, 20 risings, 40 risings like that, rising and fallings continuously without much distraction. So if it is possible, then try to figure out how this rising begins, how you are experiencing the middle of it, how you are experiencing the end of it. So what happens between the gap So just before the beginning of the falling, so what are you experiencing there? So likewise, try to introduce a little bit of more careful attention and to recognize some subtle details, so that you are not merely mindful at the surface level, rather you are introducing a little bit of wisdom to the practice.
Thank you very much, Swamiham, sir.
Yeah.
Much merit for you, that Karna Swamiham.
Good.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Geshan for the next question.
Sarvai Bhante, yeah. I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
So I have multiple questions, of course. I hope it's okay. But with the time, I'll try to restrict as well. My first question is, there are two comparisons that I have been doing. This is to explain to an individual. With that comparison that came up, this particular question. So, in the five precepts, the fifth precept, what we have always heard and say that I will not consume any type of intoxication.
Mm.
Now, when you think of the eighth precept, on there is no a significant way it is described in that manner, the way that it is being described in the five precepts. Can you elaborate why, and can you let us sort of know what is that particular word that is included?
Yeah, I think you are referring to the Ajivattamaka Sila. Because in the other typical what we call Uposatha Attanga Sila, the Suramere Manjapama Dattana is included, but in the Ajiva Attamaka Sila, that in particular way it is not included. But typically we take it very much like indicated in the Ajiva, what we call the what is that, the last precept. Micca ajiva veramani sikkhapadan samadhiyami. Because in the micca ajiva, typically there are five unhealthy or unacceptable kind of traits are mentioned. Like trading the poison, trading the weapons, trading the ammunition, or trading the slaves, trading poison. So likewise, there are few items explained. So under that, we can consider. So this what we call our livelihood has to be proper. Our livelihood has to be a reasonable, an acceptable kind of livelihood. So therefore, I like to consider the Suramere is very much included there, even though it is not separately highlighted. And so that's what I feel it is. That's why it is not. It is not that we we have taken it out. Rather, it is included in the Ajivattamaka.
I am positive, you know, like because of lack of my knowledge, I think the eighth precept on the Ajiva
Micca Ajiva.
I think the clarity of that, we don't have we vocalize it, we just say it, but we don't purely understand the meaning behind that phrase as well. I think that may be one of the reasons why we misunderstand these kind of things as well. That is what I'm thinking. So, is it possible, where would I find the detail? What does that Micca Ajiva, what constitutes to that Micca Ajiva?
Particularly in the Diganikaya, see, there is a first section called Silakhanda Vagga, where the certain highlight is given for the morality. In detail, Buddha explained the morality part. So there are the various kinds of ajivas are explained. The livelihood is explained in detail. Now, say for example, for the monks, Buddha gave so much of more comprehensive kind of wrong livelihood. So how the monk is spending his life, his livelihood. So he is not even practicing palmistry, any astrology, any, say, treating in terms of the gain and fame, treating the others, I mean the medicine, treating the others. So likewise, there are many, many areas that Buddha highlights, particularly to the monks, talking about the ajiva, livelihood of the monk. But for the lay people particularly, that wrong trades are explained, as I mentioned. So those trades are not allowed, not recommended, because it is harmful to oneself and to the others. So within that, I feel we can consider the suramere also, where it is also intoxicant, and it intoxicates the other person, and if one consumes oneself, that is also intoxicate oneself.
And this particular item came into the question simply because of a small video was circulated among certain individuals, and in that, one of the monks were basically challenging, you know, there is no way or no place or way that there are restrictions as such in the Tripitaka. And so my defense was try not to distort the Dhamma, but we try to find the clarity for it, and that's the reason why I was asking that question as well.
Yeah, you mean
so
the
no?
So are you referring the Suramere Majjhapama Dattana, that precept available in the Tripitaka?
That is one of the things what that monk said, that there is no reference to that, which I didn't know. So I have
to no. Thing is, the direct reference is there. There is direct reference at enough places. Just to give you one indication, so you can refer in the Sanyutta Nikaya, one called Pancha Vera Bhaya Sutta. I'll show you just here, Pancha Vera Bhaya Sutta. I have found the Sinhala translation. Sorry, the Sinhala version here. So there, Buddha particularly mentioned even to the say the Sotapanna. So he says there are five kinds of fears are abandoned by the Sotapanna. So one is this, actually referred there is the five precepts: Panadipata, Adinnadana, Michachari, Kamesu, Michacharapachya, Musavada, then Suramere, Majjhapama, Dattana. So this is the five precepts mentioned here in the Panchavera Bhaya Sutta. The point is that when one becomes a Sotapanna, these five precepts are very much like not broken purposely to the very, very, very detrimental level. So he is basically protecting that for the fullest. So basically that indicates, so the even for the Arya, even for the noble, so Buddha say, I mean, the fears coming from these five are not coming to him, because he is protecting it. So
right.
So therefore it is obvious that Buddha has recommended it to the lay people. So this is very much like the foundation.
Okay, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
So the my second question that was for today's discussion, you mentioned for monks, all the doors are sort of closed except for the tongue, and I think one of about it, and I have heard from different other monks as well. When I try to sort of offer a dana, they specifically say not to sort of offer anything sweet. so I purposefully not make anything, but if I know what it is, what's the reason behind it, I'll try to sort of make certain type of food in order to offer.
Right.
Now, the question came into me while you were talking about it. What I have heard now in the northern part of India, which is the very cold climate, I think the monks, they only sort of consume a lot of rice and the, what is that? It's not a cow, but I can't remember. There's a certain type of meat, and that's all what they have to consume. And but I think though they are not even craving for any type of flesh, but that is what they get. The same way, if the people, you know, offer only the sweeter type of food for the monk, they don't have to pray for it, but they sort of automatically sort of get it, these type of diseases as well.
Definitely.
Is it something for us to, or for the monks to sort of educate the
lay people,
you know, individuals, to say, hey, please try not to bring this type of food, or
I think yes, because I mean, you know, everybody needs the balanced diet. So if we simply eat too much carbohydrate, if we simply eat too much sugary items, then definitely this is an invitation for various illnesses. So I mean, offering a balanced diet is very much required. Even though that the, now say sometimes people criticize, okay, certain monasteries, certain temples, they give a list, dana list, indicating, okay, these are the food necessary. Sometimes people criticize, okay, it's not a good thing. But on the other hand, it may be, there may be a reason. So the list may have a balanced diet. We need to check whether they are asking unnecessary things. But typically, if the list is a more reasonable, balanced one, so this could be the reason why they are asking such a balanced diet. Because if people are simply offering too much sugary items, that is also an issue. If they are offering too much oily items, that is also an issue. So likewise, so we need to understand the situation in a particular monastery, and accordingly, giving proper items may be useful.
Yes. So West Virginia, the temple where Bhante Ji sort of resides, mostly they sort of publish, you know, the things to bring and things not to bring. And I think I really like that. That's where I met Venerable Dhammajiva and Jennifer as well. So
what are the items that they what are the items that they indicate not to bring?
So there were certain, when we went for this retreat, they basically asked us not to sort of bring, offer any type of soap.
Soap.
And there were several lists of that, I can't remember. I think Murakika, my wife, basically went through that list, and she basically said, and what we have to sort of take all the dry rations, that can be consumed, and that can be consumed in the breakfast.
Good.
Kind of
okay. Okay, then. So, with that comment from the Geshan, then we'll wind up the session. We have spent almost 1.5 hours. So, I cordially invite Venerable Dhammosada to conduct the sharing of merits.
Sorry, Swami Nansi.
Yeah. May our relatives and all beings share in the merits produced by today's teaching. May all celestial beings protect the Dharma exposition and the Buddha's dispensation for a long time. And may the seeds that have been planted in our hearts, the seeds of Dhamma, grow, producing path, fruition, and Nibbana. Now let us recite the traditional Pali verses for the sharing of merits. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe bhuta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe satta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyam tang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mam param. Idam o nyatinam hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idam o nyatinam hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idam o nyatinam hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.